naturally have built sort of this skill set where I'm always in the middle of something. It's more like I'm looking for opportunities where where people can agree on and come to a common purpose. I think that is how I spent my life by accident, and now here we are. And so when I grew up, all the constant messages was like, you're not going to be dependent on a man. You're going to take care of yourself and you're going to have a career. And then, so I got used to being very independent minded, right? And so then when I came to Vietnam, one of the first conversations I had that was really shocking was my cousin was like, oh, now that you're here, I can teach you how to be a good Vietnamese woman.
Oh, wow.
I want you to pour the drinks for everybody at the table. And I was like,
what? You did it.
Welcome to Vietnam Rising Podcast, where we chase dreams and opportunities in Vietnam and also get real with challenges and reality. On this season of Vietnam Rising, I'm your host, Minh Tâm, and you and I, we will sit down with the shakers and movers in Vietnam to hear about their real stories and why Vietnam is still the place to be. On this episode, Vân Ly and I, we talk about what it means to do good and creating a social impact within our communities and how that serves into the journeys of finding your life purpose. See you at the episode.
You've been here for 13 years already. How do you came back? Like, was it just a visiting trip and you're like, oh, I like it here, I come back? Or is it a purposeful trip to come back?
So I kind of know how to answer that question. I kind of don't. So I was born and raised in the US. I knew my parents were Chinese Vietnamese, and I knew that they had lived through a lifetime of war before they came to the United States, right? So in my mind somewhere, I always empathize with stories about injustice or war or conflict. And so my parents, like most Asian parents in America, wanted me to be a lawyer or a doctor. I knew I didn't really want to be either of those things. I thought I might want to be a lawyer because I thought lawyers meant dealing in the justice system, right? Mm-hmm. But what I kept leaning towards was a career in nonprofit. So I kept volunteering. I kept doing these communication campaigns for, you know, labor in Mexico, against sweatshops. I kept leaning against these very sort of political things and working in the community. And so at some point, I decided that I was going to work in NGOs. And after my first 3 years, after being a new graduate, I didn't know what to do next. But someone turned to me and said to me, it seems like you know a lot about, you know, different kinds of campaigns to help people, but you don't know a lot about where your parents come from. Mm. Like, ooh, burn. Oh, burn. And it was the same year that I took my first trip to Vietnam. So I had studied.
Was that because that statement? If someone said to you, and then you're like, okay, I need to go to Vietnam.
No. It was so I had studied in China, and I loved studying in China for 3 months.
Yeah.
But then I came back to the US and got back into American life. And I remember thinking when I left China, like, there's this dynamism, there's this moment that the Chinese economy is developing, and I want to stay, but I couldn't. And then when I came to Vietnam the first time, it was because of it was my university graduation present.
Oh.
My mother wanted me to meet finally all of my family.
Yeah.
So we have grown in the US as a very small family, like a family of four. And then I came to Vietnam and there are 12 uncles and aunts on each side who all know my name and I don't know their name. And then, you know, learning this history. And so it made me want to come back to Vietnam for sure. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure I could build a career around that. And I wasn't sure that would make sense. But then when that person said that to me, like, it doesn't seem like you know where you're from. I thought, what am I doing this for? And but then
do you identify as American or Vietnamese?
I identify as all of the above. As American, as Chinese, mm-hmm. American, as Vietnamese American. And I think living in Vietnam now, I feel very American. Mm. But I also feel like those questions matter less because I love doing what I'm doing. I love where I'm living. And there's a piece of me in each of those places And somehow that's important to me, but it may not have to be important to anybody else. Right?
I mean, everywhere you go and you get some values from there mm-hmm. is basically what makes you who you are right now, right? But do you feel like because you're coming from very different perspective, I would say overseas, then you would have a very different way to approach problems in NGOs in Vietnam?
Yeah, I think because I've spent my whole life sort of translating between different worlds, right? American world and Vietnamese family and business and nonprofit. I naturally have built sort of this skill set where I'm always in the middle of something. And I have to bridge these things together, right? No, it's more like I'm looking for opportunities where where people can agree on things. Mm. And come to a common purpose. I think that is how I spent my life by accident. And now here we are.
All about collaborations,
collaboration, mm-hmm. cooperation, and being strategic and then, you know, meeting a common good.
But you work in NGOs in the US.
Yes.
And in Vietnam as well.
Yes.
What's the biggest difference?
What is the biggest difference? There's not much difference. It's just the causes are different, right? So in the US, I worked for a nonprofit that helps children in detention, in juvenile detention, with life skills, education. I also worked for a nonprofit that helps talk to people about what's happening in Tibet, the situation in Tibet, the political situation and the lack of freedoms. And so they were all very different causes. But the skills that we needed to advance those causes are all the same.
How about like more individual story, for example, any young people seeing what you did and feeling inspired to continue or feeling, I should participate in social impacting because one of your speech.
You have a better story.
East Meets West, we have, we used to have a scholarship program.
Yes.
And so there's been different cohorts of students that I've met along the way, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of them. They're at that the time I left East Meets West, it was like 5,000 students. But I do remember later on in my career, someone came up to me at an event and they said, "Hi, Chivang." I said, "Hello. You don't remember me, huh?" And I was like, "No." I meet people all the time.
Yeah.
But it was actually nice to see she had her own little employee pass. She has like a really good job. And I remember where she started in life, right? From a very difficult background. Mm-hmm. And now to see her, you know, in Ho Chi Minh City with a real job, mm-hmm. grown-ass woman, mm-hmm. strong, confident, you know, I love to see those kinds of things. Is that because of me? No, but I'm glad that you remembered me. Right? It's good to see the sort of impact of what these different organizations do for people.
Yeah, I mean, if you, especially when you work with people that's starting from very young and you see how much they've grown in the future, then I think it's absolutely a wonder to just observe it, right? How about within your team, do you coaching or do you train people?
Well, so our team is just me and me, mm-hmm. and then a couple part-time staff. I love coaching. Mm-hmm. I love training. I love mentorship. I love the whole thing. Uh-huh. And in my time at East Meets West too, I loved managing staff. That was also a learning process for me because I was a young manager who had to learn that temper tantrums is not the way to manage people. But just, you know, taking people under your wing and giving them skills and watching them grow into their careers is a privilege, right? Mm-hmm. That I have really enjoyed in Vietnam. That's another reason I love working in Vietnam mm-hmm. is because I think we as a people are quite adaptable and we're very entrepreneurial. And when there's an opportunity, we take it, right? And so to be able to see the changes in the different people I've worked with over time is awesome. Mm-hmm.
What's your most shocking thing when you first came to Vietnam? What's the first culture shock that you had?
Culture shock that I had one of the first times was I grew up in America. And
were you in Da Nang?
No, I was always based in Ho Chi Minh City.
Oh, okay.
So,
but Mimi was in Da Nang.
Mimi was in Da Nang.
Okay.
So I grew up in Chicago, and my father, the way he raised me was, we are in the United States now, and we have to make a life for ourselves. I'm going to give my daughters everything they can do to succeed, right? And I'm not going to let anyone get in their way, was his thinking. And so when I grew up, all the constant messages was like, you're not going to be dependent on a man. You're going to take care of yourself, and you're going to have a career. Done.
Wow.
And then, so I got used to being very independent minded, right? And so then when I came to Vietnam, one of the first conversations I had that was really shocking was my cousin was like, oh, now that you're here, I can teach you how to be a good Vietnamese woman.
Oh, wow.
I want you to pour the drinks for everybody at the table. And I was like, what?
Did you do it?
Drinks for anybody. Like, I'll do it to be nice.
Yeah.
But I don't feel it is an obligation because I'm a woman that I have to pour. And then I remember it was like, oh, all the guys are going to this room to talk about business and politics. And different, all the women are going over here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, but I want to talk about business and politics. I don't want to sit there and talk about kids. I don't have kids.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I remember being like, I don't want to go to this party. Right? Took me time to figure out.
Then how do you balance from that?
That was hard for me.
Are you still sitting at the woman table now, or you're sitting at the men table now?
Now, like, we kind of mix anyway.
Ah, okay.
We're a little bit more, it's 12 years later, right? So a little bit
better.
Different.
Yeah.
But for me, I had a conflict because I did want to fit in Vietnam, and I didn't know what fitting in meant. Mm. And so I thought, is this what I have to do? No, luckily, no. I found my own circles, my own sort of way, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also figured out that I needed to be comfortable in being the weird cousin that doesn't do what everybody else does.
What is one thing that you feel like the young Vietnamese people with people who you're working in, what is one thing they should, you know, be aware of and try to improve it more?
Mm. So on the one hand, I see young, smart, savvy Vietnamese people who have their own projects, like we were talking about Huy a minute ago, who sort of have identified a problem in society that they want to help solve or contribute to solving. That is super inspiring for me, right? So there was one day where I was feeling a little bit depressed about the world. And what I did was I invited these young women that I know that are all doing different things in their own communities. And I just needed to talk to them and feel like
inspired
and understand their work better and understand how to motivate each other. Because I'm sure all of us are going to feel that moment of, you know, gloom.
Absolutely.
But then there on the other side of things there was a point where I was working with a young team, and all they did all day long was take selfies. All we did was take selfies. And so I think
isn't that frustrated?
I think there's also a threat from this really young, vibrant generation that has a lot of money in their pockets to spend on things, to also be super self-interested, right? Mm-hmm. And always need that feedback loop of, am I being watched? Am I being liked? And so that you have the two different sides. Mm.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's because they're looking for a purpose and they have not found their purpose?
I think it's because they're looking for a purpose. They haven't found their purpose. And also there's enough things reinforcing in social media and media that is important, that they need to document every second of their lives. Now, I love to document my lunches.
Yes.
And that is a selfish thing. I get it. But there needs to be a balance, right? So then you have these like really interesting young impact leaders, and then you have people who spend too much time on their phone, right? And so now how do we bridge that?
Yeah, how do you bridge that? Or how do we bridge that in general?
I just hope what I think is more present in Vietnam than, say, America is that Vietnamese understand that you are not just an individual. American culture tends to be very individualistic, right? Mm-hmm. Vietnamese know that
we're more family oriented,
more team oriented, group oriented, mm-hmm. family oriented, mm-hmm. and that your life has impact on other people.
Yeah.
And so my hope is there are more Gretas, uh-huh. right? Than who's someone who's really terrible?
Kim Kardashian,
yes. I mean, if look at Kim Kardashian, even now she's trying to reform the justice movement, right? Because I think it's something in her heart went, ooh, maybe I spent too much time looking at my but right. And now she wants to do something more meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like eventually, whoever, I mean, even in the Maslow needs, right, graph, like you have money, you have recognitions, mm. more, and then when you go up, when you have those needs fulfilled, you're looking for a further purpose in life. How do you contribute to society? How do you contribute into your community as well?
I was thinking about that also in the sense that I knew we were going to talk today about like social impact enterprises and nonprofits, and but as a individual, I think we all can have social impact in our own ways, in our own places, right? There's different starting points for people. So maybe it's that within your company, you want to change the work culture. Mm. Maybe you want to make it a friendlier, more inclusive place to be, right? There are all these different kinds of ways where people can contribute that's not starting their own social enterprise or jumping into a nonprofit job full time. Like, I love that kind of thing, but that's not for everybody.
Yes.
Or there are problems they see in their community that they want to help solve and then can educate themselves about, for example, reducing plastic and then growing a community around them to help solve those problems, right? Yeah. So it's not just about jumping in, becoming a full-time campaigner for...
Yeah, I feel like that's actually the next question I want to ask you is that a lot of people now, because thanks to social media, actually, we're much more aware of the environmental issues in Vietnam. You know, in Vietnam right now, if you go to Ho Chi Minh or Hanoi, you see the polluted air. It's just thickening. Like, you can't see so far. Like, if you're in on the, like a like tall building, you can't see like across the river.
Yeah, smoke,
yeah, that's really, really bad. And as well as like in other area in Vietnam, like in poor area or like in the centrals, there are was that Formosa?
What's that called? Formosa.
Yeah, Formosa for like, yeah. So basically the factory, they just dumped all their waste in directly to the oceans and they just like killed the entire ecosystem, like the sea ecosystem, like, yeah, ecosystem there. So it's really bad. And there, of course, because of that, a lot of people are wanting to contribute to that. But if I'm someone that just freshly graduated, I'm totally inspired to want to contribute and do better and make this world a better place. But I'm also gonna be conflicted with making money because I myself, I have to be somewhere and I can, I have to take care of myself first before I'm able to take care of my community, right?
Yeah.
And
good point.
How do you balance those?
So someone asked me earlier in my career, what skills should I have to work in an NGO? Right, or a nonprofit. And I remember thinking, I actually wish that I had gone into industry or business first, that I had built up a different skill set. My skill set was more international relations and communications, right? But there is value for people who are from very different backgrounds. I think, for example, if I look at just the nonprofit sector now, a lot of things that we need help on are operations, finance. If you're a finance person and you have 2 hours to give to a nonprofit to give them advice on how to, you know, run a better budget, that would be amazing, right? There's a place for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
And as you're starting your career, yes, find your passion, find your career, find a thing. And if that's making money, that is totally okay. I think it's more about within your life, figuring out how you're going to build in a practice for community or for social good, right? And where that's going to fit in. So maybe 85% of your life now as a new graduate is building up your career, building up your skills in whatever it is going to be, manufacturing, finance, whatever it is, right? Accounting, whatever it is. And then trying to figure out in your personal life how you're going to do some good. Maybe that's every weekend going and cooking in a kitchen for a temple, right? There's lots of different ways to contribute.
Yeah.
And doing that as part of a group of friends, as part of it, will make you feel really great, right?
Yeah.
And just being very smart about it. Where are your talents? Where are your skills that then you can contribute? Later in life, when I left the NGO world, I thought to myself, how do I want to contribute in a way where I can still make money, pay my bills,
yes,
but also do something good. And I thought, you know, later in life for me, it was about joining a board of a nonprofit, advising nonprofits, doing other things where I could still make a living and then do positive in the world too. So I think for everybody, it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm. How about your team? Have they ever encountered something similar? Like those challenges when they debate between nonprofit or private sector?
Yeah. So even with some of mine, friends who still work in nonprofit, right? Their question is, how long do I stay here? Can I save enough money for retirement, right? And maybe should I go into a social enterprise? Should I build a business? Should I make money now? Those are all questions that we all still have. I think in the nonprofit world too, it's hard because they don't always invest in the future of their employees, like in training or a sort of long-term path. So for those nonprofit workers, it's hard. It's very hard to think about profit versus nonprofit.
Especially in Vietnam, because I believe that the salary in general is pretty much very low compared to private sector.
A question that will continue. Mm-hmm. It will continue to be a struggle because nonprofit is built on not making profit. But the really sustainable nonprofits know that they have to build up an operations that's strong, where their employees want to stay. And it's, again, like what you said, they have to take care of themselves before they can take care of others. So if you're not taking care of your staff, then it's hard for them to do their mission.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious. So this is why I asked you a minute ago. So I'm curious why you think this Generation Z is so much more effective about thinking about their contribution to the world, their impact on the world. Why now? Right? And why Vietnam?
Well, I feel like because I think it's mostly contributed from social media. We're living in a world where the information is there, it's out there, and people are promoting certain things. Like if Vietnam is just still closed and disconnected from the war, and then people would just, you know, start focusing on making money or how to survive. But now when Vietnam has kind of go through that phase, right? We're no longer in the survival mode. We're more of like, oh, how do I sustain it? How do I prolong this development that I have grown for the business or the country, for the family? Then that's where we look into more long-term investment in social impact, environment, and also learning from the examples overseas. Because now we have the access to so much more information.
Do you think that, for example, Vietnamese people, what I find and what you hear a lot of foreigners say too, is we're super optimistic, right? Mm-hmm. And even there's surveys that come out when we talk about happiness and our feelings of happiness, Vietnamese rate much happier in where they are in life than, say, other people.
Well, I mean, you have to, what is the rate of happiness, right? Mm. Are you comparing like, comparing to American life and Vietnamese life, where because the standard in US is more, then you should be happier there, or because here you should be happier.
So I think
here,
that survey, what it was asking was like, in your station in life, in your current, are you satisfied with where, of course that doesn't mean am I rich, am I poor, it means am I satisfied with my life as it is now in my country,
right? I feel like for Vietnam, there's a lot of freedoms in terms of you get to do what you want, right? Maybe because of the regulation, the law, right? You still see on the road people, you know, going different directions and like breaking the law, but not there's no issues on that. And I feel that's just the mentality of freedom in a way where like, oh, you get to do but the freedom within
like
your limits.
Secret boundary.
Within your limits. And then as long as you're happy with that limit, then people are inside just happy. If that limit is just like shrinking, right? For example, I feel like, so if the law now is not to allow you to turn right anymore, right? In the street right now, when there's a red light, you can't turn right, right? And people enforce on it, then probably there will be a like, oh, I don't want it, I hate it, something like that. But then life moves on because they realize that if that limitations happen, But there are still many more freedoms that you can do within that limit. I don't know if that explained well enough.
Yeah, I think what is interesting to me, right, is so you've had, I remember when I was 20 or whatever, and a lot of the narrative was environmental problems in the United States are so difficult. And look at what this previous generation has done to us. Right? And how are we going to fix that, right?
Yeah.
And there is activism and there's, but now there's this moment where I think people are like, not only is it possible, but we're going to do it whether you like it or not. Right? Mm. We're going to push for change because we can no longer sustain and we're going to do it. So what I find interesting is that there are all these young people that think these are things that are possible and are doing it, right? Mm. What pushes them to act? Whereas before,
I mean, what's the purpose of resenting what has happened? You know, like if things has been done, then it has been done. Yes, of course, there are people who are responsible for that choice. But I feel like in Vietnam, or especially myself, I feel like there's always like more empathize on the reason why that's thing, right? For example, you know, in Vietnam, there's a lot of street food vendors. Mm. And, you know, last year, 2 years ago, there's a rules that like, oh, if you're selling on the street, we're gonna not allow you to do that anymore. And then that's the regulations, but a lot of people, the citizen themselves, they're like, but these are the grandpa, yeah. This is the dad, the mom that are providing to the younger generations to build a future. Then if you are blocking them from their livelihood, then how do we move on from there? So I feel like in Vietnam, we have a lot of empathy for wrongdoing. Yeah. Even if it's, you know, if it's wrong, we understand why it happened.
Pushback.
Yeah. But then we try to move forward and change it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And so when you decided that mental health was the thing that you're passionate about, right? How did you find your kindred spirits? Kindred spirits are people that are just like you and feel just as excited. How did you find your squad, right?
For my mental health projects, I'm currently working with the Global Shapers. This is the volunteer group from created by World Economic Forum. And one of the projects in Vietnam that we're working on is the mental health project. We choose this topic is because we find that in Vietnam, there's not enough talk about mental health. And mental health is like, you know, what keeps you moving, right? Yeah. Physical health is something that gonna go with you for maybe 40, 60 years, if you're lucky 80 or 90 years. But mental health is what makes your life happy. And if your life is not happy and content, then how do you manifest positive energies and give out, you know, do good for the community? Mm. If people are not happy, then they're not thinking of helping other people. And I feel that's the reason why I want to do mental health. And I feel like that's maybe because
did they find you or did you find them? Or do you think it's like a attraction?
Well, for
there
me,
there were people who needed to do it. And so then they found each other.
So the mental health project started because we have a kind of like a summit together with all the hubs in Vietnam. And we pitch on different projects and everybody voted for the mental health project.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's how it formed. But personally, I just particularly interested in psychology. And I actually almost considered to go into psychology major. But at the time when I was like 17, right, I realized that the burden that the people who have to take care of the mental issues is going to weigh and maybe affect it into the personal life. And I feel like I could not handle that. And yeah. I could help in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I still like mental health. I still try to work in by, you know, express and spread awareness on it. But I don't try to cure people, right?
Yeah, no, that's good too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
no, what you're doing is providing community, right?
Yeah, so and then that's where you also mentioned earlier, like if there's some kind of impact that someone want to do and it's not something that you can do for a living or you can't do for like 100% on it, then you still can contribute some part
in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like being a woman would give you an advantage of working in an NGO? Well, you know,
If you look at the NGO sector in Vietnam, mm-hmm. it's mostly women. So I think there are advantages. I'm not sure if there are advantages. What I know and what I've found a really pleasant surprise when I came to Vietnam is how fierce and strong Vietnamese women are and how resilient we are and how great, what great problem solvers we are. Right? Mm. I don't know if that's a perfectly gendered thing, but you see it.
Yes, that's true.
And we're very headstrong and we know what we want and then we go and get it, right?
Yes. As long when we find the purpose, of course, we are very committed to go towards that way. But how about people that, you know, not sure where they want to go? How do you build up the confidence of I know exactly how to do some things or I want to be in that sector because I want to help or I want to do good?
I think building up confidence is about figuring out. So, and I do this for the nonprofit clients, right?
Yeah.
Figuring out what they're good at and owning that. And then constantly banging that drum. So what nonprofits often think is that because they're not like business, that they're somehow inferior. No, nonprofits have a specific purpose. And they're really good at different things. And once you figure out what those things are, working in the community or environmental or whatever that is, right? Education, they have a huge set of expertise and they need to own that. And so knowing what you're good at, I mean, just as an individual helps you feel confident. Yeah. And then that practice of communicating that externally
mm-hmm. is but in Vietnam, confidence. The culturally, as we mentioned earlier, is more community sense. So being standout is actually a challenge for people because, you know, you don't want to be someone making too much, you know, looking too different and being, you know.
I think what's also Vietnamese.
Yeah.
So I could argue the Vietnamese all over the place is that when you have someone that trusts you already mm-hmm. and they introduce you to another potential partner, that partner will trust them too.
Right? Yes.
So I think that with really great organizations that have a track record and have results, they can communicate those things also through other people who have trusted them to do those things. Mm. Right. So, yeah. And I'm happy to help them communicate that however they need to do that. Mm-hmm. It is really about building that strengths and the opportunities and looking for things. I think I really believe in my heart that people are good. Right. And that there are structures that enable us to be really, really good and sometimes not so great. Right. But it's also just about finding the right collaborators, the right team. And that's got to be a cross sector thing. And that's got to be in an individual sense. Right. Mm-hmm. Finding those themes and those things that really drive you and then looking for solutions and then working towards it. It's like a project management puzzle that.
As an individual too, you have to find what you want or what your purpose is in life. And how do you recommend someone that's looking for a purpose? How do they find what they is meant to do?
I think that people have to also try things, right? Mm-hmm. So
travel,
read, mm-hmm. educate themselves. The answer is not going to just fall out of the sky, right? The answer for me never fell out of the sky. The answer was a very curvy road of me bumping into things.
How do you solve in issues that you can't solve by yourself?
Oh. So I have a bad habit in which I always think I'm right all the time in my whole life. But when I get to a problem that I can't solve easily, sometimes I know what I want to do, but I don't know how to get there, right? Or I know what I should do, but I don't know how to get there. Then that requires finding people to help you. That requires talking to my friends, my family, and then trying to work that out and knowing that sometimes the solution is not going to come right away. And then finding the resources or the people to help me get to the next place.
Yeah. For me, I feel like whenever I call all my friends are some kind of mentor because I feel like I can learn something about from everyone. And for each different problem, I would go to a specific person.
Yeah.
And I would just talk to them. And sometimes I just want to hear their perspective. And even sometimes when I know I need to do something, but I don't want to do it because I'm lying to myself, then I go to the people who are very honest. And they would just, you know, say straight to my face that I need to solve this issue.
So everyone needs a friend that is kind of mean. No, we'll tell them like the brutal, honest.
Yeah, the brutal, truth, honest, right?
And the tough truth. Mm-hmm. And then get you over the line, right?
Yeah, so just kick your butt to push you.
Mm-hmm. And I think one other problem with young people, and this included myself too back then, is that I thought that my life partner would be that person that you can always ask.
Ah.
But then I met this really funny couple in Hanoi. Mm. They were visiting Hanoi and they had been married for 50 years.
Mm-hmm. 50, 50.
50. Wow. And I asked them, how did they stay married so long?
So they are around 70s?
They were 80s? Quite old, 80,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
And they, and then they looked at me and they said, and then one says, should I tell her? And the other one goes, tell her. And he goes, and he says, I don't tell my wife half everything of my problems.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what? And he's like, no, it's not that I hide them from her. He was like, but I go to her for certain things that I think she will help me with. But for other problems, I go to people at work. I go to, right? I have a whole set of people. I don't only depend on her to support me through the hard times.
Yeah.
He was like, when it's about kids and things, of course. He was like, but I know her so well. I know what she can handle and what she cannot handle. Right. Mm. And so that's, and then she said, and I do the same thing. And she goes, and I go on vacations with my girlfriends. We talk bad about our husbands. She's like, because you need that balance, right?
Yes.
That big group of network with all these different resources and skills. And then you figure out your way.
Yeah. Can you tell me what's Ray's partner and what are you guys doing?
Okay. So Ray's partners is a consulting firm. We sort of built it in the last 6 months, a little bit earlier. Basically, we are taking the skills of all of our partners, which is mostly all of us have worked in the nonprofit sector. All of us have also worked a little bit in business. And now as a business, we are helping nonprofits raise money and communicate about their missions. And then for businesses, we're helping them just be better businesses. So build in the kinds of important indicators like environmental impact, looking at their social policies to just make them nicer places to work and with better impact in the community. So it is a niche thing, but it is a super fun thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember talking to your co-founder that Ray's partner is doing something that mostly in Vietnam doesn't have a bridge, right? Basically, there's enterprise, private sector, and then NGOs and charity and whatever. And you guys are trying to bridge that gap. How are you bridging it?
We are totally that bridge. So I think even nonprofits and corporates, they talk different languages. And they're very different. Their business models, their organizational models are very different. But the things that need to happen to build change in places like Vietnam, United States, anywhere, is partnership between nonprofits and corporates. And so what we do, I think, is we know how to be that liaison between the two and negotiate their interests so that some sort of social good is advanced, right? Mm. Whether it's an environmental project or a educational project, healthcare project, whatever it is between nonprofits and corporates, we help build those kinds of partnerships.
Mm. I do feel like partnerships in private sector and the NGO sector is mostly very relationship-based, I assume. Basically, you know, the NGO side, it would just, you know, go networking and see, like, they get to know a lot of people and then approach and tell what they do. And if the other person is interested, then there's a collaborations. But do you feel like there's a better approach?
I feel like it's natural for both nonprofits and for-profits to be in their own worlds and like in their silos, right?
Yeah.
And so when they're approaching each other, often it's like a transaction. It's like a contract. So either one negative is either the corporates treat a nonprofit like a supplier for their charity day or that charity moment or project. And then nonprofits treat the donor or the corporate like a cash cow. They want the money, right? So that they can do their projects.
Yeah.
And the way that we try to approach both sides is to be more strategic, that what they're building is a relationship and a partnership that has long-term goals and long-term gains, right? That they each have interests in whatever cause that they're choosing. And the way to have the most impact in those interests is to work together and figure out what they each bring to the table that will make the project stronger. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think something that corporates don't always understand, but some really savvy corporates get, is that nonprofits are necessary. They have a social goal in mind. They know how to work inside communities with, you know, in difficult environments with vulnerable households, vulnerable people. and then advance change. Whereas corporates are very good at finance, operations, and they have a lot of people power. They have a lot of skills within a corporation, right? And that can also support a project and make it more efficient and run really well and run on manpower that's super interesting and skilled. And so...
So this corporations or like the foundation that you are building, is it... where it came from? Where's the idea came from? Because I know you work from both sides, right? NGOs and also private sector.
I think it came from the fact that, so for both Mimi and I, my co-founder, we came from a area of expertise, which is fundraising. So at that time, when I became a fundraiser in Vietnam for the first time, If you had asked me 10 years ago that I would be in business, I would have laughed in your face because wow. I was always interested in nonprofit. Right? Mm. But as a fundraiser, what I recognized was that my job was to communicate the organization's purpose to people who would fund us and that was a business activity. Mm. Right. And so then I became really good at talking to corporates about the necessity of nonprofits. And so I think. What we want to do is continue that. We're basically really good at it. And these are things that nonprofits find very difficult, communicating their goals and their terms and their purpose to other people outside.
Mm, why is that?
I think because they're so focused on their mission, right? They're so focused on actually doing projects that help people that the sort of operational side is
like the marketing,
is the marketing, like communications. The
communications. Mm-hmm.
Like I have one nonprofit client who does water and sanitation. Mm. And so all they talk about is toilets. Toilets all day long. Water systems, pipes, toilets.
Isn't that a good thing?
It is a good thing. But then when companies ask, why should I work with you? They need to also remember that actually the bigger vision is to help communities that otherwise wouldn't be supported, right?
Yes.
The thing about nonprofits is they care about those communities left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when we look at development in Vietnam, it needs to be an equitable thing. It needs to be a sustainable thing. And so we can't leave large rural communities behind. We have to build them into that process, right? And that's what nonprofits are good at. And that's why corporates should want to talk to them.
But how do you start realizing the bigger pictures, right? For both sides, for NGO to realize that what they are doing for water sanitize is bigger than just water sanitize. It's about helping community as well. Of how do you make the private sector realize that, helping the other communities, like the poorer or the weaker community would help with in the long way for the business?
Let me start with the second part first and then I'll go back to the first part.
Yeah.
I think I was thinking about this morning, right? If you look at, I'm an American, I was born in America, I'm very proud to be an American citizen. But if you look at what's happening in the US now, it is as a result of a country that has developed in a way that is not equal. So a lot of people have been left out of that process. And now you see the difficulties in their economic system, in their justice system that people are reacting to, right? So long term, there's a huge risk, right? Yes. There are companies not treating people well. There is the government not treating people well for different reasons. And that needs to change, right? So in a place like Vietnam, we have an opportunity. I also sometimes see myself as a Vietnamese citizen, even though I'm not a Vietnamese citizen. But I've lived here so long and I really appreciate living in Vietnam. And one of the things I think Vietnam has an opportunity for is that we are growing super fast. And a lot of those international funders have pulled back because Vietnam is developing in its own right, right? But that we need to also be careful that development is done in a fair way, in a sustainable way.
Yeah.
And companies are part of that picture. And there's a risk that if you don't contribute to the development of the country, that there will be all kinds of crises, right? Economic crises, environmental crises. And if you're even furthermore contributing to those things, then it will affect your bottom line and it will affect the consumers that look to you to buy your products. It will affect your reputation, affect so many things. And so the more proactive companies can be in contributing to positive change in Vietnam, right? Economic development, not just the financial stuff. the better everyone, more benefits for everybody, right? And part of that will require partnering with community members. Mm. For the nonprofit leaders, it's the same too. They are so committed to the sort of social side, right? The really savvy nonprofit leaders are the ones that totally understand that their mission contributes to a bigger purpose in Vietnam. And for their staff, yes, their staff should focus on the detail, the technical, what they're really good at, whatever that service is, educational services, healthcare services, environmental impact, awareness, whatever that is, right? But the leaders of that nonprofit need to carry that vision, the vision that they're contributing to bigger things, and knowing how to link that to issues that affect corporates, that affect government, that affect media, that impact Vietnam. Mm. This is the stuff I love to do.
Mm. And how do you raise help them?
How does raise help them? So for nonprofits, I think it's just continuing to help them build capacity, right? So helping them become more self-sufficient, figure out their funding strategy so that they're not spending so much time on building a little bit of money, but looking at the right kinds of investors and donors who will contribute to their costs, right? And doing that in a very efficient way, so that the staff can do their jobs. For corporates, it's about getting them to understand different kinds of entry points in which they can be a better business to their employees, a better business to the community, and also just cleaner, greener, right? Having a positive impact, not just a negative impact, and not just looking at the financial gain. And so we raise partners, build strategies on both sides of that puzzle.
Has anybody have come up to you and tell you how much, you know, they appreciate your work before?
Yes, all the time.
Oh, tell me one.
Let's see. I think for, you know, it's like any kind of firm. We show results. So for our NGO clients, for one of them, we showed them that actually there is a donor base in Asia. So before, they focus only on international funders and American funders because they're American-based nonprofit.
Yeah.
But Vietnam is a growing country. We have lots of people who care about things.
That's true.
And there are people looking for easy ways to give, but they don't know how to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we help them do is build a strategy to sort of attract those people to give money to that organization. So they're super happy about that. Mm-hmm. And then also on the other side, the donors are happy that they know how to give, how to contribute to things they care about in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I think that's good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What else should we talk about?
I think we're good.
Good.
Okay. Thank you again for...
Thank you.
Okay. First of all... thank you for being here and sharing with us a lot of your wisdom as well as your passion on social impacting. If people want to reach out to you, how can they reach out?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can email me.
Do you have the handles? Oh. It's going to be VANLY from Raise Partners.
On LinkedIn, huh?
Yes.
No, it's something else very complicated. I'm sorry, guys.
But we'll your LinkedIn. I know this. Let me help you.
LinkedIn, help me.
Yes. Her LinkedIn name is Van Lee, right? VANLY from Raise Partners.
Yes.
How about the email or any other social media that you use?
Almost the same. Van.Lee@Raise.Partners.
Partners with the S.
S.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes.
It's been nice talking to you.
Yeah, it has been a such pleasure. And I hope you, the audience, also enjoys this episode. If you like it, let Van know, let us know on her social medias or her contacts, or come to us, let us know on our social medias on Vietnam Rising Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and email at vietnamrisingpodcast@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening, tuning in, and I see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye.